Now for our second feature. Emma Brennan is reminiscing about her dad's banging homebrew. The reader is Robin Quine.
I say it every year, but the months seem to have flown past. I can't believe we are two-thirds of the way to Christmas already. But the unusually warm weather, with several heat waves under our belts, seems to have made everything early this year, including the harvest. When we were kids, harvest time was something I really looked forward to, not least because it signalled the imminent arrival of cooler weather and cosy indoor pursuits. Harvest time was also significant in our house because it was when Dad collected bounty for his homemade wine. Homebrewing and winemaking enjoyed a heyday in the 1970s, inspired by the grow-your-own lifestyle depicted in TV shows such as The Good Life. With the availability of equipment, which you could buy from high street shops, including Boots, it was also somewhat cheaper than the pub. Over the years, Dad made wine out of pretty much anything that was in abundance or going to waste. He was well ahead of his time in terms of this eco-lark. Some of his best efforts included wine made from parsnips, damsons, elderflower, and even lettuces, all either foraged or homegrown. It was a great way to use up the surplus, and boy, did it give you a warm glow. Dad was a key member of the village wine circle, and his concoctions were much envied because they were really very good. The Seville orange and ginger variety, for example, a fortified blend which was deceptively Moorish, became known as Paddington Bear wine. The process of getting it to this point, though, was a bone of contention in our house. There was a real science to winemaking, which first involved sterilising of all the equipment to keep bacteria at bay. This resulted in buckets, bottles, and rubber tubes strewn all over the utility area. Then, many an hour went into the mashing, chopping, and preparation stage before not one, but two fermentation processes. The main issue was that in order for the wine to ferment, it needed warmth, and the shed was way too cold. Much to Mum's disgust, Dad decided the best place to ferment the wine was the airing cupboard. All well and good until the elderberry wine incident, when Mum opened the cupboard door to discover the deep red contents of the demijohns had bubbled out of the airlock and bung all over the cleanly washed sheets and through the floorboards. Once the wine had been through all of the processes and had been siphoned out into the bottles without disturbing the sediment in the bottom, there was the agonising wait for it to mature. This was followed by either elation or disappointment as the first glass was sampled. I recall my great-uncle Bert being chief sampler. Dad would line up the little glasses, which we affectionately referred to as the Shippums, due to their striking resemblance to paste pots. Then Bert would taste the different varieties in turn, insisting he needed another little drop of each one to fully appraise each bottle. After about 15 samples, he was often a little worse for wear by the time he left our house. Good job his dog knew the way home. In addition to the wine, Dad also dabbled in homebrewed beer. There were often issues with the pressurised beer sphere, although this never made it to the airing cupboard. It was consigned to a corner of the utility where it could do minimal harm if it exploded. As the beer sphere had a tap on the side, it was a little too easy to sample a taste. So much so that when I was at upper school, I decided to substitute my lunchtime coffee in a flask for shandy, made with the homebrew and some lemonade I found in the cupboard. There was a misapprehension that it couldn't be too alcoholic, given that it was homemade. But in reality, the homebrew was probably stronger than normal beer. The problem was that I didn't factor in the obvious fizz of the beer not marrying well with a flask. During French lessons, there was an audible crack and whoosh as the glass inside the flask exploded and the contents began to seep out into my school bag. My anxiety levels rose faster than the bubbles in the beer as it started to smell decidedly like a brewery around my desk. On reflection, I was lucky that the French teacher spent most of the lesson with a Vicks stick up his nose due to chronic sinus issues, so his sense of smell was somewhat lacking. I would undoubtedly have been expelled if he had discovered that I'd smuggled homebrew in with my lunch. In the end, I managed to surreptitiously mop up the shandy with my school sweatshirt, and no one but my immediate classmates were any the wiser. My parents, on the other hand, were not happy that I'd helped myself to the homebrew and that I'd arrived home with a shattered flask and beer-sodden school bag. But despite this, I still have really fond memories of Dad's homemade wine and beer. I admit that I did raise an eyebrow when my other half suggested he might like a go at home brewing. I think a lock on the airing cupboard door might be in order.